You're listening to Word on the Street with Isaac.
So, yeah, a huge shout out to Narwar, who got that for us. Super sweet of him. He interviewed Tyler this past week at his show, so if you want to give that a listen, please do. It's great. It's really funny. It's at Neptune Records. And now we're just going to play a song quickly. We're going to play a bridal party song, and we might play an interview that Valley did with them later. And also, I'm not hosting today. Surprise, surprise. Valley will be hosting. I'm just passing the torch on for at least today. You're listening to Word on the Street.
Fruitless by Bridal Party, and up next we have a couple different things. So my name is Valley, like a valley but spelled differently. If you listen to CITR religiously, as you should, you may know me from Wednesday afternoons, but if not, you may also know me from Word on the Street. I'm taking over for Isaac today, and I'm going to do my best imitation of his usual intro. So hello, this is CITR Word on the Street with Isaac, right after Nard Renoir, the human serviette. Yeah, thank you. Okay, well, you know, I tried. I've been practicing. Isaac's introduction to the show today was that little Tyler, the Creator clip, which we have been able to get and which is very fun and which we will hopefully be playing a lot, which transitions us perfectly into what our first topic of the day is, or rather the afternoon, evening, which is the Tyler, the Creator show, which I know that a couple people who are in the room with us today, we've actually got a lot of people. Do we want to go around and, like, say who's here?
Hi.
Who's here?
Who's here?
I don't know.
That's great content.
No one's here.
Hi, I'm Helena.
Hello, I'm Teo.
Hi, it's Ines.
Hey, it's Christine.
Hi, it's Sinead. Jack's also in the corner.
Yeah, I'm here.
Lucy.
I'm Finn.
Hello, I'm David.
Hi, I'm Kirk.
So as you can tell, there's a lot of people here today. Yeah, well done. So Tyler, the Creator. Wait, who in the room went to the show?
You guys can't raise your hands.
For anyone not in the room. So just counting. One, two. Does anyone want to talk about it?
I cried.
Literally? Or like,
no, yeah, like literally. Oh, I cried.
Which song made you cry?
I think it was...
Which song made you cry?
Thanks. I think the piano rendition of Earthquake.
Oh, yeah.
That made me cry. I can't remember, like, the set list that he did.
I like how he...
I cried in, like, multiple times.
I like how he phased boredom into running out of time. Just conceptually, yeah. I thought that was really smooth.
Oh, I jumped when the fire came on.
Fire. Oh, yeah, it was really warm.
No, it was like, it made a bang noise, and I was like, oh my god, I'm gonna die. Yeah. So I liked it.
What, did you go to Flower Boy last time?
Yep.
So what do you think about this show versus that one?
I think it was better choreographed. I mean, like, because I don't think Flower Boy really had choreography in it. He was just kind of walking around the stage. It had cool set design, but I liked this. I loved when he was like marching, and then there were like all the millions of Tylers like on the screen behind him. That was cool. So good.
Yeah, you're there too, right? What do you think?
I mean,
bring the mic closer, man.
It was great. I was there in spirit. I watched the whole thing.
Spirit, like you were there, or you weren't? Oh, you weren't there.
I wasn't there. I watched it from people's Snap stories, and it wasn't just one angle because it was multiple angles. So technically, I was there. It was like a virtual 360 of it.
Yeah.
From different people's stories, and I also liked when the screen came on with all of him marching, and he was marching. That was really cool. That was trippy.
To be fair, I also wasn't there, and I also really liked that.
See, so. Yeah, exactly. And his mic spin, like holding the cable, spinning it as it was in the ad. But it looked great.
It was great.
I think it was really well orchestrated. Like it seemed so calculated, like everything down to each beat of every song, he was moving exactly how like the album would have played out to be. And I think he interpolated Flower Boy and then songs like Yonkers, like somehow into that whole mood.
He did She too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think, did he cover something at some point?
I feel like he started singing something that the crowd didn't recognize, but I wasn't sure what they were. I don't know. I don't want to be like a fake Tyler fan and not know his own stuff, but...
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
Yeah, but overall it was great. Really good set. Too bad Blood Orange couldn't come. I was supposed to interview Blood Orange.
That was like the saddest part.
I was supposed to interview Blood Orange, and I didn't tell everyone here that because I was gonna be like, yeah, you can watch it, but he didn't get across the border. So
what did you
maybe
think
next
of,
time.
What did you think of Gold Link?
Huh?
What did you think of Gold Link?
I think he had pretty good energy. I like how he played Mad City too, and he really got people going, and then he kept going off that momentum. I mean, I thought it was good because I feel like his music isn't really like hype music exactly. Relative to that.
I was going to say, remember how last week Mustafa was like, I realized when I got to Claro, I don't like Claro.
Oh, you have
that happened to me with Coldlink.
Okay,
I realized
fair.
I don't like him. I thought I did, but I guess I don't.
So why exactly?
Because he's boring. All his shit is like the same. All his stuff is the same. Excuse my language.
That's okay. No, it's good that you have a different opinion.
He's just he's just the monotone. Like, he has a nice voice, but like after a while, I'm like, okay, cool. Like, I don't know. His stuff doesn't like really draw me in. It's not super exciting. It's pretty generic.
I mean, I wouldn't buy a ticket to a Goldlink show because I don't know his music well enough. I mean, I was there for Tyler, and yeah, I would rather see Blood Orange over Goldlink.
Yeah, so. I was gonna go mostly to see Blood Orange. But.
Yeah, I want to hear that man's voice.
Yeah,
but
he's really good live.
Oh, you've seen him.
Oh, thanks
of
for
course.
Rubbing it in.
You've seen Frank too. So you've seen everyone, right?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Wow, cool. Great.
Does anyone else have something to say about the Tyler show? No? No?
I cried.
Right. Start and finish with that. What's next?
So now a weekly segment that we're thinking of doing is... a weekly segment that we're thinking of doing is like an album analysis of the week. I feel like I kind of did that with Ginger a few weeks ago.
You did.
But yeah. So we're going to make that like a weekly segment where people can bring in albums that they really like or that mean something to them and then talk a little bit about them and analyze them too. And I know that today Isaac has prepared a very detailed little spiel about an album that's special to you.
Yeah, oh, can I borrow these? Yeah. Long time on this. Thanks. Sorry, I just messed up your hair. So mine's kind of two albums because they are sequential. So I've talked about these albums before. One is Piñata by Freddie Gibbs and Madlib. And the sequel came out this year, and that was called Bandana. And today I just read a bit more about it because I've been listening to these albums nonstop all year. I think I listened to like parts of them every day, pretty much. And I also found out there's supposed to be a third one, and it's called Montana, so I thought that was really fitting. So I'm just going to read pretty much what I wrote about this. I'm going to share why I think it's important, why I think it's good, and just some of my favorite bars from the albums. So a long time ago, Freddie Gibbs and Madlib started working together about in 2013, and they made this album called Piñata. You've maybe seen the cover before. It's pretty much Freddie sitting on a bench wearing an Adidas tracksuit, and there's sort of this zebra graphic around him. I think Freddie and Madlib perfectly capture what a contemporary gangster rap album should sound like. It was mad throughout times when Freddie was, in and out of the streets, and you can hear it. It's about cocaine slinging and gangbanging, and perhaps this is best captured by Freddie's scar across his right eyebrow. He's a pretty intimidating-looking dude. He's also hilarious. I don't know why everyone's looking at me like, what's going on? Okay. Again, just Teo just distracting me. Anyway, Freddie, in my opinion, is the most quintessential example of a trapper turned rapper, and he encapsulates three of hip-hop's most important lessons, I think, the success of hip-hop, the struggle, and what we can learn from the former two, or as I like to put it, Grey Poupon, Coupons, and Neutrons is something that I kind of explained that through. And that's something I want to work on in the future is kind of an analysis of albums in this way. But Madlib, if you don't know Madlib, he's produced on over 30 albums in the past 25, 30 years. He's collabed with MF Doom on Mad Villainy. He's half of that. He collabed with J Dilla, and no doubt he's something special, even though Freddie is maybe someone you wouldn't expect him to work with. And I think the intro to Piñata kind of sums up both these albums very well. It's called Supplier, and this is a quote from the intro. It really didn't matter what the means was or how you had to go and get it. That means if you had to step on 10 people to get a dollar, then you step on 10 people. And you know what this is, I heard constantly. Only the strong will survive. The title of Piñata actually came in a dream to Freddie. And it's pretty funny. Obviously, if you start listening to the album, you learn very quickly. He's been in the streets. He's been a drug dealer. He's seen it all. And he said he had this dream where there's these kids hitting a pinata, but instead of candy coming out, there was just dope coming out. Like, there was just drugs, like, spilling out of the pinata. And he's like, damn, man, the kids are just playing in the dope. So he named it Pinata. I thought that was pretty funny and just a good way to sum it up. One of my favorite bars from this album, before I move on to Bandana, because Bandana is the one from this year, is critically acclaimed, but that... Oh, wait. Explicit warning. Critically acclaimed, but this shit don't mean a thing when you're rocking mics and selling microwaves cooking cane. That just captures it. It's raw, it's got rhymes, and it samples like crazy. It's a perfect juxtaposition between old hip-hop and new hip-hop. So Bandana now. The sequel... First, produced entirely on an iPad. That's interesting. I talked to a couple of my producer friends about this. They said they could tell the difference, but it's. I think if you're not, you know, if you don't have that ear, there's no way you could tell that this guy made this on an iPad. Madlib's kind of reclusive. He doesn't have a cell phone, he says, which I don't know how you survive in 2019 without a cell phone.
He's got an iPad.
Just an iPad. Just an iPad. So he's not making any phone calls, but he's still making beats on there. I think something that's super important to address with this album is Freddie was falsely accused and charged with sexual assault a few years ago in Vienna. And before he was acquitted, he actually spent 4 months in prison. And while he was in there, he was just writing away as much as he could for that period of time. Just those Mad Lib beats stuck in his head. And in some ways, this makes me think of when Tupac was in prison and he came back and then he released All Eyes on Me. It's kind of similar with Bandana. He was gone for so long and some of his best work comes out and it's just a banger. So, of course, expectations are really high and Mad Gibbs, as they call Freddie, and Madlib together does not disappoint. It's looser, but it's still tedious and Freddie just touches on a bit of everything. He talks about the ubiquity of slaves on Flat Tummy Tea. He talks about Supreme Mathematics on Palm Olive. And he's on that with Pusha T, who I think is the second best trapper turned rapper. And just to make a quick comparison there, I think Freddie has more of an emotional range than Push. He dives deeper into the specifics of what he's seen. He talks about jealousy, trauma, psychological baggage. It's more chilling. It's more raw. He's going to be blunt on what he's seen and the dangers that he's witnessed. But he's not afraid to admit humility while still being someone who is considered a thug. This isn't monotonous either, even though it's the same kinds of stories. I think it's about bringing new perspectives and growth to the same stories of the streets, and that's an absolute must for hip-hop. And just sort of to close off, I wanted to read some of my favorite bars from the album, from a few songs, and these three songs, I think, are sort of the most important, or the most meaningful. So, Fake Names, this is one of the most disgusting beat switches I've heard a long time. The switch kind of also signals this scarring reality of murder and death to this braggadocio about pimping and drug dealing. And I would say even like Three Stacks would be satisfied with this art of storytelling. So just a bar from this. I didn't walk through hell in these size 12s. Speak it from my own mouth before I let the time tell. Dream team legal. I never take an L. Courtroom, funeral, fresh. Givenchy, my lapel. Pretty good. Practice. This one is on faith, loyalty, and infidelity. He's been very criticized for this situation before, but pretty much seeing two women at the same time when he's a family man, quote unquote. But this is kind of like a mirror image of this questionable love that he has with the streets too. It's not just this questionable love with his own wife and his family. And there's a really beautiful sample of this Donny Hathaway song called Make It On Your Own. And this is the most soulful and visceral and honest he could get as a thug, I think, and just opening up in a different way. So my favorite bar from this one is, I went T-Pain for, she about to get off work at the club I used to wait for, explicit, fucking up my whole family structure to clear the day for, when I was going through problems at home, I should have prayed more. And lastly, education. And again, just connecting back to what I was saying before, what can we learn from hip-hop a bit more? This is representative of that. So featuring The Roots, Black Thought, and Black Star's Yazeen Bey, or Mos Def as you might know him as. This cut gives three different points of view on African-American struggles with imperialism and institutionalization. And you gotta listen to the whole song because everything is very concise and everything is thought out. There's not a word that's wasted. But I just wanted to read some bars from Mos Def's verse or Yazeen Bey, and
This is how it goes. They go on one way. They come out crazy. Peace, predatory school, emperors and conquerors, pharaohs and followers, goblins and monsterers. Stone heart jewels and gold for the fools. The bones of the innocent is buckles on their boots. The jail overcrowded. They emptied out the school. See the devil twitching, ears itching from the truth. So I would give both these albums a listen. Watch out for Montana, Tony Montana, right? That's all I got to say about that. But I'm a huge fan of these albums. I think anyone who wants to get a really honest look at what I think hip-hop is about, then these are the best albums to listen to today.
Great. I think that we should play a couple more songs before we move into our kind of next topic on the list. We could play Elasto by Shwe and Artemis.
Lost on plastic dancing makes me move this way. The groove makes me like you. I wouldn't have it any other way. The groove makes me like you. And after the dancing, I'll keep holding on.
Our rhythm and our movements never been so insane.
The groove makes me like you.
When I look into your eyes, don't make me plain.
The groove makes me like you.
Let's see here. God. Ugh.
Everybody dance, dance. What, you don't like to dance? Everybody dance.
Ugh. Everybody. God, this is awful. Isn't there anything?
Anything? Anything?
Listening to the radio these days can be distressing. Fortunately, here at CITR, our programmers choose the music that they play, so our charts reflect what people actually listen to. To find out what's really topping the charts, pick up a copy of Discorder magazine, or check us out online at citr.ca. Unless, of course, you'd rather keep listening to the chart-topping single, Everybody Dance.
What, you don't like to dance? Everybody dance. Everybody dance. Everybody dance, dance. What, you don't like to dance?
101.9 FM. We're on the street.
Do it again.
Oh.
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. We're on the street.
And who's talking?
Maurice.
From?
Big Mouth.
Wow. We're so happy to have you here in the studio.
It's actually
today.
Way harder to do it sitting at an angle. My throat went. They went up, and then I couldn't do it.
Lovely.
Anyway, thanks, guys. Yeah. Welcome back, everybody. I'm not the host.
So now we're going to be going into our next topic, which is climate change and the climate crisis. We have a few people who want to give a little bit of info on that. Do you want to take it away?
Sure. So because of like all of the recent attention around the climate strikes and whatnot, I figured it was only a matter of time before you'd see stuff like that coming up in popular music. It has been coming up in music for a really long time, but because it's like so central and it's like really a part of mainstream news now, I'm more so noticing it reflected in popular songs too, as well as like some instrumental music that I'm going to get into later. So I know that Lana Del Rey has a song off of her like latest album where she talks about like the hills of Los Angeles burning, which happened last year, and it's like that. It's like the song itself is about a relationship, but it just shows that like we're now living in a world that has sort of like an apocalyptic tilt to a lot of the things that we're doing, and it's like those emotions are being meddled with like other emotions that we're having, and they're all coming together like so. And another artist who has a song about climate change is Billie Eilish, that's like really popular. And again, the point of talking about popular music is to talk about like the everyone's collective psyche. It's leaking into everybody's mind, like the burning hills in LA are once again mentioned. And yeah, so as far as like instrumental music goes, there's a lot of cool interpretations of effects of climate change that are being put into song. So one example is somebody called Daniel Crawford. This is a little bit older. It's from 2013, but he took 130 years of climate change data and he composed a music piece about it. So the pitch like changes frequency to like show like the changing effects of like melting ice and whatnot. And then another artist called like Judy Tuet did 36 years of measurements on the Arctic sea levels and turned it into a piano piece again. And then the final point of classical music that I wanted to bring up was two composers called Sigismund Weiss and Sigismund Suter took Vivaldi's Four Seasons, and a lot of people have like reimagined Vivaldi's Four Seasons, but he took it and then created a fifth season to show that through climate change, typical weather and season patterns are kind of disappearing, so it kind of like descends into chaos as we're losing that formation of seasons.
It's really cool. I know that, I don't know if they're as popular here, because I went to their concert a few weeks ago, Bastille. Yeah. And I know that they're super big, like, back home. But
where are you from?
Like, East Africa. I don't know. Right. People like them there. Like, in the Seychelles. But and obviously if they're, like, they're British, so they're probably big in Europe as well, I'm imagining. But there weren't that many people at their show. But I know that their newest album, Doom Days, is basically, it's, like, all about, like, what would happen if the apocalypse came. And it's a very good album. I would definitely highly recommend. And the song that's named after the album, or that the album is named after, is just brilliant. Yeah. Does anyone else have anything they want to say?
That's really well done, well said. But I also want to talk about. it's cool because we've seen like a a shift towards more talking about climate change in music, but it's also like not a new narrative because with artists like Sun Ra, who is a free jazz composer, he's got pieces a lot about nature, and one of them is like this song is dedicated to nature's god, which was written in 1970, I think. And then like more recent examples as well, or especially in like hip hop, is off of Outkast's Speaker Box and The Love Below, Vibrate. Andre has a verse about climate change, which is like one of the earlier mentions of climate change in hip hop, and that's like a growing theme we've seen because this year People Under the Stairs released a song the effects of climate change on densely populated areas, and so I think it's important that a lot of hip hop communities start talking about climate change more because it does disproportionately affect minority groups and lower income group like communities, and so I think we're seeing a shift more towards communicating about climate change, which is cool.
Mm-hmm. I love this clapping thing that's going on. It's great. I know the 1975 also put out a lot of music in terms of like climate change.
There's that one song, it's like self-titled, it's just like Greta Thunberg talking.
Yeah, it's like her speech.
It's pretty cool.
Was really good, yeah. Ooh, off their like newest album.
That's sweet.
Also, King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard's new album.
Yeah,
King Gizzard like and all the about Lizard. Environmental King issues. And yeah. Cause it's, yeah.
Shout out to the best King, name ever.
Yeah, shout out to them.
They're pretty good.
I would like to also contribute to the topic, even though I might not be able to provide too many details, but when I'm doing the research, aka typing into my Google searching engine, I saw two songs which I recognize, one of them being Monkey Gone to Heaven by Pixies and the other one being Idiotech by Radiohead. Mm-hmm. But the interesting fact that I recognize is that when I first listened to these two songs, it absolutely didn't occur to me that these two songs were about climate change because I was too distracted by the music. So I think one thing that's worth mentioning is that sometimes for artists, it's hard for them to balance between being ambiguous, which is almost like the designated characteristics of an artist, and also being outspoken whenever it's necessary, especially when you want whoever is listening to your music to have one message and one message only instead of their own interpretations, which in this case is to address the issue of climate change, which in my opinion is not a really quote-unquote cool song topic to write about. Cool. But I guess, yeah. Yeah, it's becoming cool. And I believe this is a very healthy trend. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that art can be really distracting sometimes, and sometimes it takes an effort to be a listener.
I was just going to add on to that with Idiotech by Radiohead, because I know we were talking about this before the show too. Like, they're so far ahead of the curve on everything, and Tom York, the lead singer of Radiohead, was recently on Colbert. And if you know anything about Radiohead, he's super awkward and introverted, and he doesn't like doing those things. And you can tell just by his body language alone, he doesn't really want to be there, but he is. And Colbert was asking him some really great questions because he was saying, how does it feel to be right about everyone being so depressed and, you know, the world going downhill because Idiotech, you know, Ice Age coming. That was a long time ago. That was 20 years ago almost. And it just shows that, you know, they've always been aware, and they're one of the first bands that really made that a prevalent theme. So I just wanted to note that as well.
And going back even further, when I was initially looking for music that is based on climate change, besides what I already knew, I was wondering if I was going to have a hard time not playing like Mercy, Mercy Me, The Ecology by Marvin Gaye, which is like far preceded Radiohead, and then Joni Mitchell's Big Yellow Taxi. Like, those two songs are, I believe they're from the 70s or the 60s. No, haven't searched up like the release dates, but stuff like that was coming around. There was also a book called Silent Spring, and that's how this was introduced to me in a lecture. In order to like illustrate stuff that was brought up by Silent Spring, I was shown like the classic songs, and there's just so many like waves of this like, not like to compare it to like waves of feminism, but there's just so many different like generations that become awake to it. Then it's like which generation becomes the pressure generation, where it's really just an all-encompassing issue, and that's us, I hope.
Yeah, like the generation that starts to take action, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
That is interesting. I feel like our generation definitely is, especially with the climate crisis, the climate strike and everything that happened. Did anyone go to that?
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, so many people.
Made three signs.
Oh, wow.
Did you recycle the signs afterwards?
I actually don't know what happened to the signs afterwards. I think they're on display in our house. That's good.
Beautiful. Mm. I love that. That's great. Okay. We can play another song. We can play...
this one, because it's about...
Okay, Monkey Gone to Heaven by the Pixies, which is about climate change. Here it is.
There was a guy. An underwater guy who controlled the sea. Got killed by 10 million pounds of sludge. York and New Jersey.
Good, and I've been wanting to find out more about local music.
Yeah, I heard about it through CITR and Discorder.
What's that?
It's a radio station. You can review all the music that comes in and help out with touring bands or just do some data entry to get started in their music department.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, you can just email volunteer@citr.ca and they can help you get into the station or just come in whenever.
Well, I'll be there, so...
Not
I'll try to kill these thoughts with liquor. Can't find my place. I got a bitter taste that I can't wash out my mouth. I'm so afraid I've made a huge mistake. Yeah, this is hard for me, but I need to figure myself out.
So next up, I'm actually going to. So next up, we're going to be listening to a little interview that I was able to do last week. So I was able to interview Bridal Party, who are a band from Victoria, BC. It was very exciting. It was my first interview too, so a lot of kind of nervous excitement as well. So here is the interview. Yeah, enjoy. To start us off, hi guys.
Hello.
I was just wondering if you would like to introduce yourselves as the band, your names, and your role.
Our band's called Bridal Party, and I'm Jordy, and I play electric piano and synthesizer.
I'm Susie. I sing and play guitar.
I'm Lee. I play bass.
My name's Joe. I play guitar and sing.
I'm Adrian. I play drums.
And how did the name Bridal Party kind of come to be? I know that's probably a story that you tell pretty often.
The whole name came up because my roommate at the time had gone thrift store shopping and bought a shirt for an actual bridal party. It was a Gildan tank top that had a date on it for sometime in 2014. It's this really nice pink cursive. And I was a little bit drunk, and I told them I would buy it for $10 and that I was going to name my band that. And everyone agreed.
I love that. Do you still have the shirt?
I do, actually. It fits me terribly.
I love that. That's a great story. And so then I was wondering if we're going to just talk about the tour a little bit. So I know you guys have been on tour for quite a while. You've done some of more like Eastern Canada and also kind of ranging into the US as well. Do you have maybe like a favorite show or a favorite audience?
I think our best shows are in Winnipeg and Montreal, both with great audiences and like audience participation. They're dancing. Those are my faves.
And was that just because of like the audience and the mood or maybe the venue?
I think both. The energy was good at both and the venues were really warm and, I don't know, a good size.
Yeah. I had a lot of fun in Kamloops last night, actually. The venue was good, the sound was good, and there was like a lot of people out having a good time.
Yeah.
That's good. I'm glad to hear that. And so would you say that those audiences were also, like, the most involved?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. That's always what makes a good show, is when you can connect a bit and everyone's having a good time.
And so along the tour, I know that you guys have experienced some, like, car troubles and different things like that. What happened, like, initially with the car? How did you, you know, solve that?
Well, I was driving. I went to pass a semi about 3 hours, about 3 hours out of Ottawa on Highway 17. And as I was passing it up the hill, the engine just kind of cut out and the semi just started, like, coming really close to us. And then we had to pull over and our engine was completely toast. We had to get a brand new one, a brand new used one. And that cost us a lot of money.
And you had, like, a GoFundMe page or something. And how did you spread awareness about that? And how do you think people kind of found out about that in order to, you know, contribute?
It was just on social media. And it was mostly just a lot of family and friends and people in our community, Victoria, who, yeah, really came through and were so grateful. It was very helpful.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of Victoria, so I know that you guys all are originally, you know, from there, and the band kind of is from there. How did you find each other? How did this band kind of start?
Well, I actually live here. The truth is out. So they've been a band for like 4 years, and I was in another band from Vancouver called Illacuda, and we kind of connected and started playing shows together. Like, we booked one for them here, and then they did the same for us. And I guess their keyboard player at the time, I'm the third keyboard player, but their keyboard player at the time couldn't tour because he's going to school. And I love to tour, and I love these guys. So naturally, I just came into the band, and now I'm here for good.
Love that. Is there any, like, scandalous stories as to why there have been so many keyboard players?
No.
It's continually grad school.
Yeah, grad school.
They keep leaving us to go get highly educated.
Yeah.
They always write one song and then bequeath it to the band and then have to move on for some other pursuit. So, yeah, we're really nervous.
Do you think that's your plan?
No, I love them too much.
Aww. And do you find that being kind of, well, I guess mostly from Victoria and just located in Victoria, how do you think that affects your maybe ability to be in, like, the music industry and in a music environment?
I think, like, Victoria has a really strong scene in and of itself. That's, like, people really like to give each other a leg up, and if anyone has resources, they're pretty willing to share it, regardless of what kind of music they're making, which is wonderful. So that helps, I think, with just, like, getting, like, finding an audience, like, a crucial audience at the beginning. It's true that there aren't as many, maybe, opportunities to, like, open for big bands or to, like, be around, like, where a lot of, like, grant money is, but I think any place has its limitations. We are, like, a little spatially isolated, but we have a really strong community, and we found other ways to kind of connect with people, say, in, like, larger cities. It's just a matter of going there and, like, putting your best foot forward, and the world's never been smaller as far as, like, connecting professionally goes than it is now.
And do you think that the tour has also allowed you to open up more doors in terms of accessing that, you know, music industry?
Yes, definitely.
Totally.
Okay, that's great. And then speaking of the tour, the main reason that you've been on tour is because of your new music.
Mm-hmm.
Could you tell us maybe a little bit about the new album and what went into making that album?
Yeah, it's 10 tracks. It's called Too Much. And we've been writing those songs, like, since we formed as a band in 2015. And yes, kind of a collection of songs across a large span of time, recorded over 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And do you think that it really works that they are such a, like, a mixed time period in your lives? Or do you think that in the future you would rather focus on music that was written at one time?
I think both. I think it works because it's what we had to do to learn. And in the future, I think we are going to try a different approach just to see what comes out of it.
And I know that in a previous interview that you did while you were in Montreal, you mentioned that you are usually a fan of like the freshest music that you've put out. So how do you feel about the fact that there is such a different time period kind of viewed in, or I guess heard in this album?
Yeah, I think I kind of struggle with maybe like spending too much time on one project or one idea kind of thing. I feel like I like to just get it out there and like let the idea kind of come together rather than like spending too much time with it and like going back and redoing things and stuff like that. But I think with this album, it was kind of, we sort of did it in stages. We did kind of come back and redo some stuff and like backtrack and whatever, but it definitely felt like we were doing kind of one thing at a time, so it didn't necessarily like feel like we were kind of getting exhausted over the same thing for 2 years, you know. It's kind of like a gradual process.
Great. And I know that you had all kind of listed your favorite songs on the album, mm-hmm. and your favorite song was quite an older one. Mm-hmm. So was it your idea primarily to kind of put older music into the album, or who kind of came up with that idea of bringing everything together as opposed to starting fresh?
I don't think it was something we decided like outright. It was just, we had songs that we still enjoyed playing and wanted to have on a vinyl or like on a record. Yeah.
I think when we started recording, the songs were fresh too. Mm-hmm. It's just a lot happens in 2 years when you're working on a record.
And so now that, you know, Too Much has captured quite a long time period of, I guess, your music career and your music experiences, what do you think is next up?
Another record, for sure. I think we all have a few songs that are half written, and so we're going to start working on those as a band in December. Just get right to it and hopefully have something demoed by the spring and then recorded by 2020 or something. No, 2021. Yeah.
And so in terms of that new music, were you able to work on any new stuff while you were on the road or while you were on tour?
No. I don't know how bands can do that. Like, especially when you have to, I guess if you have things more planned out, then it would work, but anyways, we did not do that.
Maybe if
as
you
a
had
band.
Like a big tour bus and someone was driving you around and you could just sit in the back with a guitar, but we got a minivan and we drive ourselves.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. And so my last question for you is, I know that you probably get the, you know, what is your favorite song quite frequently, but I was wondering if you had a favorite lyric from the new album.
Oh, the new album. I need a
moment. Or in general. Mm-hmm. It could even be someone else's music. It could even be, oh, when I listen to this song, I feel really inspired. Actually, two questions. What is your favorite lyric from your music, and what is your favorite lyric from other things that you've heard or been exposed to?
My first thought for our lyrics is one of Susie's from When I'm Naked that says, "Seduction is so easy, but pleasure is never perfect."
And is that because of how it sounds in the song, or is that just because of, like, lyrical kind of content?
Those things, yes. Also because it just seems very frank. And in this moment, it was just, like, I just heard it play in my head. So, that one.
Anyone else?
I don't have a favorite lyric. And I know Adrian doesn't, because he doesn't know any of the lyrics. But my favorite songs right now are from Caroline Polachek.
I like the Madonna lyric from Attention, mm-hmm. Because it's set up really nicely from the verse before.
Thanks, Lee. I'd have to get back to you.
I know that Jordy likes the David Byrne lyric, "Lost My Shape, Trying to Act Casual.
Great. Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Do you have any additional information you would like to share with people, maybe upcoming concerts or upcoming plans for your music. I know you mentioned the plan for like the next kind of record, but just in terms of where your tour is going and where you think your music will be going in the next little while.
Yeah, please listen to our record wherever you listen to your music. It's called Too Much. We released it in vinyl on Kingfisher Blues in August, and we're about to go tour down the west coast of America, and we're going to keep making music for as long as it feels good, which we hope will be a while, so keep an ear out.
Great. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
All right, so thank you for listening to the interview. Just before we head on to our last little song and our last little goodbyes, Lucy, you had a little update?
Yeah, just from what we were talking about with the Climate March, in case you guys didn't know, there's an event tonight happening at BC Hydro Theatre West Mall called Let's Talk About Plastic. And they have like zero waste workshops. Mm-hmm. They got snacks. They're doing like an eco movie screening and have like a really cool lineup of speakers. So check it out. It actually starts at 6.
Wow, perfect. So we could go there right now.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So I guess that's goodbye from us. Does anyone have any last things they'd like to add?
I was just going to say we finally set up an Instagram.
Yes.
So you should follow it. It's CITR Word on the Street. Also, our Twitter, which I'm going to get the password from Gabe, who's not here today. Gabe. Usually, he promotes the Twitter, and that's CITR Word Street. But I think we'll just change it so it's the same name. So, CITR Word on the Street. You'll find that Tyler video there. So, it's, you know, it's real. You can see it for yourself with your own eyes. And we're just going to close off with a song by one of my roommates, Stone Cold Finger. This one is called Poison. And watch out soon for a new project that he is dropping, produced by Eurovisa Visa, one of my other roommates.
All right, goodbye. Let's...
Bye.
Said I'm turning into poison, I said cough.
This is Eliza from Mauna, and you're listening to CITR in Vancouver. Hey.